Okay, good. You see, I have a timer over there. It's 5-6 seconds into the lecture and I'm still wasting your time. So I already gave two talks in September in Geneva in 2013. One in September, one in October. So in September, I described a certain trees and wheels valued invariant of two spheres and one spheres in R4. And then in October, I told you how a certain, or told some of you, how a certain reduction of this invariant is somehow an excellent Alexander polynomial. What I want to do today is to tell you why that invariant was, from what perspective that invariant was natural to start with. So, in fact, what I'm going to do today is completely independent of, it's in fact the prerequisite of the previous two talks. Okay? So, as always, my talk will follow a handout. Here's the full thing. I hope each of you have one. If not, there is one spare. And let's start. So, last time, or in October, in September, I defined a certain space of knots of knotted objects, KBH of T and H. Let me tell you what it is. It's not remind you, it's tell you, because there is no dependence, okay? So, KBH is equal to the span. So I allow formal linear combinations just because it's useful later on. Okay, but really it's just the set, but I allow coefficients, of embeddings into R4 of things that look like this. So it's a certain set of tails or balloons. Sorry for the funny language, it will become clearer later. And balloons are just two-dimensional spheres, oriented, I suppose, labeled by the elements of the set T. And each one connected with a string, like all balloons should be, to a base point. Except my base point is at, I typically choose it to be at infinity of S4, okay? Or at, you know, far away in R4. So that's not the typical structure of balloons, but okay. And likewise, there is also a set of hoops. And a hoop is just a circle with a string connecting it to infinity. Okay, and those circles are also oriented and also labeled. And the set of labels is the set H. And then the set KBH of T and H is the set of all ribbon embeddings of these things into R4 or S4, which is the same, modulo isotopy. So modulo, essentially modulo deformations. Okay? The word ribbon, I don't want to explain right now. And there are two reasons for that. Well, one is that, well, it's not going to add much to the content of the talk. Two, I actually expect that sooner or later we will be able to get rid of the word ribbon here. But I should say that as it is a serious handicap that I have to restrict to ribbon embeddings. Okay. Anyway, last time, in September, I constructed an invariant zeta going from this space KBH into the freely algebra generated by the set T raised to the power H. Now, elements of the freely algebras are trees, so it's trees. And cross cyclic words in the alphabet T. So a cyclic word is just an alphabet, is just a word where you allow cyclic permutations of the letters. Okay, so a word written along around a circle, if you wish. And these are the wheels. And of course, what I mean is linear combinations here and arbitrary linear combinations. Well, this is automatically a linear space. And also I should say that all spaces are completed. Also later on, all graded spaces are completed. So I allow infinite power series. Okay? So here the invariant is valued in infinite linear combination of trees provided their complexity grows. Okay? Likewise for words. Okay. So my goal today is to tell you why this invariant is expected. That's all. So it's a very basic talk, actually. It's everything will be very elementary. The complicated formulas of last time are sort of, you know, once you know that the invariant is expected, it might take some technical challenge to derive the formulas, but it's essentially a computational challenge. So that was what was done last time. Okay, but now I'm going to explain why this invariant exists. Okay, first of all, I need a better description of this space KBH. And here is a conjectured description of this space. So the conjectured description is that this space KBH is the space of all pictures in the plane that look like this, modulo a certain collection of relations that I will explain in a minute. Now, what do the pictures look like? They have a special point that's called infinity. Then they have red strands coming out of that point and ending in bullets, okay, ending in blobs, like here or here. Those strands are labeled by the same labels as the, these are actually the tails, the balloons, okay? And also a collection of blue strands that start at the base point and end at the base point and labeled by the head labels. And there are two types of crossings. There are, in fact, well, there are, well, red can cross blue, and blue can cross red, and red can cross red, and blue can cross blue. But then there are two types of crossings. There is the sort of normal crossing, in which one strand goes over another, and the so-called virtual crossing, in which two strands pass through each other, or at least they do so in the picture. Okay? Now, let me tell you how Sato interprets these, or let me tell you the dictionary of how to interpret these as KBHs, so as embedding of balloons and hoops into R4, okay? So it goes in two steps. First of all, you replace every strand by a band, okay? By a sort of band in R3, with the convention that when you have a crossing, the overstrand becomes the sort of, well, okay, when you have a crossing, it gets translated to a picture like this, where one band goes or punches through the other one, okay? So there is an outer band, this one, and an inner band that goes through it. Okay? Furthermore, you push the bullets into caps, into ends of bands, and you push the virtual crossings to either a crossing of two bands, where to either one of these two possibilities, where the two bands pass either above one another or below one another. I don't know, it depends which side you're looking at. Okay? Then, there, okay, sorry, and blue is simply kept in place. Okay, so blue, or if you want, you can think of blue as being whatever happens to the middle of red. Okay, so blue just, blue goes according to the same rule, except you think of it as you just put it in the middle of whatever you would have done to red. Okay? And then, oh, and I guess I should have said that in these pictures, blue is never the overstrand. It's always the understrand. So that you never, you know, if you consider blue as being the, or if you do to blue, if you define blue by doing what red does and going in the middle, you never have a conflict here, right? You will not have a conflict which side to go, because the overstrand, because blue is never the overstrand. Okay? Good. Now I want to interpret it in R4. So, to interpret it in R4, what you do is, well, you look at these things, these are embedded, you look at these bands, these are embedded in R3, you make two copies of each one, two parallel copies of each one, so you like make a if you want, a sandwich out of each band, and you push one copy a little bit up, or you push the interior of one copy a little bit up in the fourth coordinate, so in the t coordinate, and you push the other copy, the other membrane, a little bit down in the fourth coordinate, in the t coordinate. And for the blues, you just don't do anything. Alternatively, you do whatever you want. Okay? It just doesn't matter. But anyway, if you look, for example, here, then as a picture in R3, this picture is singular, right? Because one membrane intersects the other, the line of intersection is here dashed. But as a picture in R4, it is non-singular. Because what I will do is I will push this one a little bit further up and further down. I will push the over tube a little bit further than I push the inner tube, this tube. Okay? And then in R4, this intersection line disappears. Okay? So this becomes a pair of tubes, sort of one passing through each other in some sense in R4, but without intersection. This becomes a cap in R4. And this becomes a pair of tubes that pass each other either this way in R4 or that way. But in R4, this way and that way are the same, so it really didn't matter which way I've blown the virtual crossing. Okay? So, now, what picture is described in R4? Well, I blow up, well, I suppose, sort of start the blow up a little bit off the base point. Okay, so consider the little bit piece of strand near the base point as the string of the balloon. And then you have here a long tube that ends in a cap, so that's a balloon. I guess it's the kind of balloon that you follow to make, you know, dogs, whatever. Okay, but so this is one balloon, and here's another balloon, and this just remains a strand in R4, a line in R4. Okay? Now, there are some relations. Okay? So, obviously, there are some moves you can do on these pictures that lead to equal topology in R4. Here is the list of moves. I will explain it in a second, but before that I will explain my convention. So my convention is that purple means either red or blue. So all of these relations can be written with either red or blue. Okay? Except blue can never be over. So wherever you see an over blue strand in this collection of relations, you interpret it as a virtual. Okay? So this is just a rule of how to interpret these relations as relations on red and blue. Okay? You know, it's actually consistent with what I said before of thinking of the blue as being the core of red. Because, well, you know what? It's a waste of time. I will not tell you why it's consistent, but it's topologically meaningful, even this relation. Anyway, now I can go through the list of relations. There are the usual Rademeister 2 and Rademeister 3 moves. And it's a lovely exercise to visualize why these relations are true. In fact, they are true already at the level of bands embedded in R3. Then there are the virtual Rademeister 1, 2, and 3, which are exactly the same as the usual Rademeister moves, except with virtual crossings. Then there is the mixed move, and again, each of these, the verification of each of these moves is drawing a little picture and seeing that you can slide from the left-hand side to the right-hand side without singularity. So each of these is trivial to verify. Anyway, there is the mixed move, which says, so this arrow is just my cursor, my mouse. Okay, it's not a perfect. But anyway, which says that if you have an honest crossing and a pair of virtual crossings passing to each other, you can slide them to the right, to the other side of that honest crossing. And then there is a pair of funny relations. There is the overcrossings commute relation, which says that if you have a virtual crossing and two ordinary crossings to its left, you can slide the two ordinary crossings to the right, provided they are over crossings. Okay? And the reason this relation is funny is because the symmetry is broken. So the corresponding undercrossing relation does not hold. The corresponding undercrossings commute relation does not hold. So if you have a strand going under, like here, and you want to slide it below a virtual crossing, you cannot. Okay? And again, it's a lovely exercise to draw these pictures and check that and see why this is true. Now that I think about it, I probably made a mistake that I didn't actually draw these relations. So if you will forgive me, I will look up my website for 2 seconds, my previous talk, and find this and find a place where this is explained. So, right. So this is from the handout from my previous talk, which I guess is the other side of your present handout. And here is how overcrossings commute is interpreted, is proven. So overstrand becomes sort of the outer band, and a virtual crossing becomes two bands passing each other externally. So this is the left-hand side of overcrossings commute. This is the right-hand side of overcrossings commute, and it is clear that you can slide from one side to the other side. And it's clear that when you reinterpret it in R4, you get an isotopy. Okay? Yet if you try to do it with undercrossings commute, so for the undercrossings commute, the strand you want to slide is the understride, meaning the strand that goes through. If you and the other two strands intersect virtually, meaning intersect externally. And if you try to push this one up, instead of sliding nicely up, it comes out on the other side with this sort of twist in it. I hope you can see it. Okay? So, mistake corrected, and I can go back to the talk. Okay, and then there are two relations, the cup-pull relations, having to do with the cups. Okay? So one relation is that if strand goes over a cup, you can pull the cup down so as to get this. And I think it should be clear, right? You know, if you have a band and another cupped band penetrating through it, you can slide it down. Likewise, for the virtual crossing, if the cupped band is, this is the cup here, my hands, is completely external, you can slide it down. So this is the cup-pull relation, but sort of the other cup-pull relation, there should have been a red line here. But the other cup-pull relation where you pull a when you try to pull a cap that goes over a strand, fails. Because again, if this is the cap and it goes over, meaning the other strand goes through it, I cannot pull. Do you see it? Okay, good. So I think that's the end of the description. Oh, sorry, this is the end of the description. This is what I wish the description of the topology will be. Now I have to tell you the reality. The reality is that the map I just described from this picture into, from these pictures into four-dimensional topology is known to be surjective, so it's known to be to describe all four-dimensional knots, but it is not known that this is the complete set of relations. Okay? So, in some sense, what I will be telling you later, what I will be telling you from this point on, is about a combinatorial gadget, pictures, modular relations, instead of being really about topology. Only when this disturbing conjecture that this really describes the four-dimensional topology will be proven, only then my lecture will be a lecture about topology. Okay? However, I should say two things. One, the invariant that I will construct has a TQFT description as well, and the TQFT description is direct from the topology. So I do know that the invariant at the end is well defined on topological objects. That's one thing. And the second thing is, even at the level of combinatorics, this kind of pictures includes in it ordinary knot theory. You can sort of imagine it. You need a little bit of further play, but basically if you ignore the virtual crossings, you get more or less ordinary knot theory, and if you play a little more, you find that you get that it includes ordinary knot theory completely. In fact, ordinary tangle theory. So these pictures include ordinary tangle theory. And if you restrict your attention to ordinary knot theory or tangle theory, this is a complete set of relations. So the restriction of this invariant to ordinary knot theory is known to be well defined even at the level of combinatorics. So now you see why I think this is a disturbing conjecture, and please prove it. Okay, so what's next? Okay, now I want to tell you a complete, okay, now I want to tell you about the invariant I'm looking for. Okay, so first of all, remember that when I defined this space of pictures, I allowed formal linear combinations. This is where I use it. So let me define a new type of crossing, the so-called semi-virtual crossing. It looks like an ordinary crossing, but it has a circle around it. Okay? And this is not really topology, this is an algebraic notation. This crossing stands for the difference, or this notation, every place you see this notation, you just interpret it as a difference between an ordinary crossing and a virtual crossing. So it's a semi-virtual crossing. Okay? So, given my conventions that over can only be red, this really means that it's either red over red or red over blue, minus the corresponding virtual counterparts. Okay? So, if you have a picture like the pictures above, that has n or more than n semi-virtual crossings, let's say it has precisely n semi-virtual crossings, then I will interpret each semi-virtual as a difference independently. So overall, such a picture will correspond to 2 to the n pictures in which the semi-virtuals got replaced either by virtuals or either by ordinary or by semi-virtual. So each picture with And semi-virtuals really stands for a cube of 2 to the n ordinary pictures with signs. Okay? So let me define IN. Well, you know, I'm writing it as a power because there is a sense in which IN is the nth power of I1, but I don't need to know it right now. So you just consider it as a formal symbol. So let me define IN to be the linear span of all pictures with more than n, or more or equal to n semi-virtual crossings inside KBH. Okay? So clearly, IN contains I to the n, IN plus 1 contains IN plus 2, and so on. So really, these INs define a filtration of the space of knots. So consider the associated graded of this KBH relative to this filtration, meaning the infinite direct sum of IN modulo IN plus 1, and call this thing A of balloons and hoops, ABH, the space, whatever, the associated grade. What I seek is an expansion, so a map from KBH to its associated graded that satisfies a certain universality property, property U. What's property U? So property U says the following. So you see, taking associated graded is a functor. So apply GER to this map itself, to Z itself. You will get a map Z, you'll get a map GER Z going from GER K to GER GER K. Now, the associated graded of something that's already graded is itself. So you will get Z going from GER K to GER K. And what I, sorry, you'll get GER Z going from GER K to GER K. And what I want is that GER Z will be the identity. That's the universality property. That's all. It's a, you know, it's obviously a natural property. Okay? Now, but what does it mean in practice? All that it means in practice is that if you have a certain gamma inside IN, so a picture with more than n, at least n semi-virtuals, then the invariant evaluated on gamma should be, well, it should be, it should live in this infinite direct sum, so the first n components should be zero, then the next component should be the equivalence of gamma, class of gamma modulo IN plus 1, and then all the rest, I don't care what they are. Okay? Now, why should I care? Why should you want such an expansion? For the first reason is, gee, it's obviously natural. Okay, what can I say? And it's sort of, but you have to have the taste for this kind of things before you believe me that this is natural. Okay? And I should say that it's vastly more general. The same construction applies, the same definition applies in many other circumstances. Okay? So it's a part of a general theme, if you wish. Also, really what Z does, so you see, GER of a space is sort of a mirror of that space. It's sort of a simplified version of the thing you started from. So having such a Z will mean that you can study KBH degree by degree. You can study topology in somehow an inductive way. So it's clearly a good thing to have. Here's the second reason. Consider the dual of KBH modulo IN plus 1. What does it mean? It means, well, linear functionals on KBH, so functions on knots, so in other words, knot invariants, but knot invariants that vanish whenever you have n plus 1 of these semi-virtuals. Now, a semi-virtual is a difference. So, vanishing on a semi-virtual would mean to vanish if you take the difference between taking one option or another. Now, differences are like derivatives. So, combinatorials are combinatorial analogs of derivatives. So, saying that you vanish on I to the n plus 1 means that these are invariants that vanish when you differentiate n plus 1 times. When you differentiate, and in some combinatorial sense, n plus 1 times. But differentiating n plus 1 times, or invariant things that vanish when you differentiate n plus 1 times, are also called polynomials of degree n. So, in some sense, studying this dual space is the same as studying polynomials of the space of knots. It's like studying the set of all invariants by studying polynomials, by starting with the study of polynomials. Now, then by a chain of linear algebra manipulations, you show that constructing such a Z means constructing a universal finite type invariant. Constructing a Z is exactly the same as constructing all polynomial invariants. So that's my second motivation. There is a certain natural class of sort of polynomial invariants, and what I'm seeking to construct is all of them at once, in some canonical sense. And then the last is just a cute example. So, do I have time? Maybe. Okay. So this is the Taylor example. Replace k by c infinity of Rn, replace I by the ideal of functions that are 0 at 0. Then In will be functions that vanish like x to the n. And then In modulo In plus 1 will be just polynomials of degree n. Right, these are functions that vanish n times when you don't care about functions that vanish n plus 1 times. So that's precisely polynomials of degree n. So therefore, A, the direct sum of In modulo In plus 1, is like power series. So what we're seeking is a map Z from C infinity functions into power series. Such a map has a name, it's the Taylor expansion. Okay, so in some sense, what we're seeking here is a Taylor expansion in knot theory. Now, again, this is vastly more general. You can look for Taylor expansions of many, many other things. I'm doing the special case of balloons and hoops. Are you with me? Okay, the problem is that before figuring out, before constructing Z, the hard thing is to understand what A is, right? How do you figure out what I to the n modulo I to the n plus 1 is? It's not at all clear how to do it, okay? And then the trick, the plan, is that first you construct a candidate A. So I call it A tilde. A tilde is a guess for what A should be, okay? And you can, and A tilde will be a graded space, and what I want it to, is to be a mistake from above, okay? So I want it to be bigger than A, so it should be a graded space with a projection pi into A, which is surjective, with a map pi into A, graded map pi into A, which is surjective. And then, instead of constructing Z, Z doesn't exist, I don't know what it is yet, instead, I construct a map Z tilde, which goes into A tilde, which has its own universality property, its own property U. And the property U that you want from Z tilde is the following. First of all, abstractly. Abstractly, if you look at Ger Z tilde will be a map from Ger of KBH, meaning from ABH, into A tilde. Into Ger A tilde, but A tilde was Ger, was graded, was born graded, so it's associated graded with itself. Okay? So Ger of Z tilde will be going the other way. And the property U, the property I want, is that if you do pi and then Gerzy tilde, by the way, this notation means do this, then do that. It's composition done the right way. So if you do pi and then Gerzy tilde, you get the identity. So doing this and then going up gives you the identity. That's the property that I want. Suppose I was able to do this. So suppose I was able to construct A tilde pi and Z tilde. What will it give me? First of all, pi is known, was given to be surjective. The fact that it has a one-sided inverse means that it's also injective. So pi is an isomorphism. So this space is that space, I can identify them. My candidate was the right candidate, was the right thing. And secondly, given that my candidate is the right thing, if I identify these two, Z tilde becomes, the definition that I gave for Z tilde becomes Z tilde, property U for Z tilde becomes Z tilde is an expansion. Okay? Or more precisely, the composition of Z tilde followed by pi, now call it Z, will be an expansion. Okay? So, again, instead of finding Z directly, I will find a candidate for A, which will be an overestimate, and I will map Z tilde into this candidate with some universality property, and then I'm done. Okay. I guess the universality property can also be stated in a more explicit way. So basically, if you have an element D here, which is of degree N, then the universality property is that if you push Z to here, then compute then compute its Z, its, I suppose this should have been Gerzy tilde, so then compute its Z tilde, then you get pi of D back again, plus perhaps elements of higher degree. Okay. So, you know, after plan there should be action. So here's the first piece of action. Here is A tilde. Okay? So A tilde is the space of diagrams which look like, well, it has a set T of red strands that have caps at the end, that have bullets at the end, they don't mean caps anymore, okay? And it has a set H of blue strands, okay? And it has a number of arrows, where the number of arrows is the degree of such a diagram. And the arrows, I think the picture sort of it is clear about how the arrows can go. They can go from anywhere to anywhere, but they never hit the same point. So you never hit with an... So all vertices are trivalent, no quadrivalent vertices. The red strands can have either arrow tails on them or arrow heads, and the blue strands can only have arrow heads on them. Or, equivalently, you can mod out by a relation which says that whenever you have an arrow tail on a blue strand, the diagram is set to zero. Okay? Now, that's not yet A tilde. A tilde is this modulus on relations. And let me explain what the relations are. So, tails commute. So, if you have two tails on a red strand, you can swap their order. You can move one arrow tail across the other arrow tail. Okay? However, heads do not commute. So if you have two heads on a strand, you cannot swap their order. Then there is the analog of the cap-pull relation, which says that if you have a head near a cap, the whole thing is equal to zero. So you could have heads on the red strands, like here, but if the head was right next to the cap, you set it to zero. However, this is asymmetric. If you have a tail near a cap, it's not set to zero. Okay? And then there is the one remaining interesting relation, the 4T relation. So the 4T relation says that if you have, three pieces of strand, two of which have to be red, the third one is purple, so it can be either blue or red. Okay? And these pieces of strand could be anywhere in the diagram. So, you know, this red could be here, this red could be here, and this purple could be here. Or, you know, the two reds here could in fact be on top of each other, along the same red component. Okay? But anyway, whenever you have these three pieces of strand embedded somewhere inside this diagram, if you put two arrows on them, as shown, or as shown here, then this is equal to if you put two arrows on them, as shown here, or as shown here, plus as shown here. So basically, the linear combination of four diagrams that are constructed by taking an arbitrary diagram, putting this configuration in it, or this configuration, or this, or that, so this linear combination is inequality. Are you okay? Okay. So where did this come from? And I told you this is a candidate for the associated graded. I should tell you where it came from. So I should tell you what the projection is into the associated graded, and I should tell you how to where these relations came from. Okay? So first of all, I guess I'm still working here. So first of all, here is the projection. Here is how you interpret a diagram like this as a KBH, and noted a diagram from before, with n semi-virtuals. So what you do is you interpret each arrow as a semi-virtual. And then, you see, each arrow has a little neighborhood, and I'll call the strands around the arrow A, B, C, and D. So, you know, each arrow comes with four labels around it. So, what you do is you take each arrow, instead you write a semi-virtual crossing, and you connect these semi-virtual crossings to each other in the same way that they were connected in the original diagram. So basically, if the C of, or if the D of one arrow was connected to the A of another arrow, you do the same connection on the semi-virtuals. And if you have to, you know, if you have to go far away to make the connection, then if you have to go from here to some far away place, you do it using virtual crossings. Okay? I think it is better if I'll show an example. So here is an example. Oh, let's do it in red. So here is a diagram in A tilde with only two crossings. How do I interpret it as a knot? Okay? Well, I guess I first label the segments 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Then I put a semi-virtual here and another semi-virtual, I guess, here. Okay? And the first semi-virtual, let's call it A, just temporarily, corresponds to this strand. So it's a semi-virtual in which the over strand is labeled 4 and 6. The second semi-virtual is, and the under strand is labeled 1 and 3. 1 and 3, I should be keeping track of orientations. There is some convention for orientations. I might be getting it wrong right now, but forgive me. And then the second one is a semi-virtual between 5 and 3, so 5 and 3, and 2 and 4, and then I just connect the dots. So 3 should be connected to 3, 4 should be connected to 4 using a virtual crossing, and 5 is where the cup was, 6 is where the other cup was, and I suppose these two go to infinity, and I've just constructed both of you should have been semi-virtual, so I've just constructed an element of I2. This is now an element of I2. So it's not hard to show that all elements of I2 arise in this way, and the next thing to do is to explain where 4t came from. So here is where 4t comes from. So you start from Rademeister 3, and you think of it as an identity in KBH. So it's an identity between knots. And then what you do is you remember that a semi-virtual is equal to an ordinary crossing minus a virtual crossing. But alternatively, you can write it as ordinary crossing is equal to virtual plus semi-virtual. So every place where you see an ordinary crossing, you replace it by virtual plus semi-virtual. Well, here you have three crossings, I can't count. So it becomes 8 pictures. The right-hand side becomes 8 pictures, so you have an equality of 8 pictures with 8 pictures. Now, let's consider the case where you have replaced every crossing by a virtual crossing. So you get virtual, 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 virtual. This is exactly the virtual Rademeister 3 move. So, of the 8 pictures that you get, one on the left cancels one on the right. Then you look at the cases in which one of the crossing was replaced by a semi-virtual and the other two are replaced by virtuals, and these also get cancelled by the moves from before. And then what is left, what is not cancelled, the part that's not cancelled by the moves, is the cases where you have two semi-virtuals in this picture, so these are these three cases, or the case where you have 3 semi-virtuals. Likewise on the right. Okay? But now, instead of considering it in KBH, pretend now that in the rest of the knot there were further n minus 2 semi-virtuals, and I also have the 2 that are here. Okay? So I can consider this as being a linear combination in I to the n. But I don't want to think, I want to work in the associated gradient, so I want to study it in I to the n modulo I to the n plus 1, but in I to the n modulo I to the n plus 1, this will already be 0, because it has one more semi-virtual. So this cancel, these two cancel, and you're left with these 3 are equal to these 3 in IN modulo IN plus 1. Or, you know, if you restrict your attention to just what you see here, it's I2 modulo I3. Okay? But you see, this is the image via pi of this picture, this is the image via pi of this picture, and so on. So overall, we find that the image via pi of this combination is equal to the image via pi of that combination. The image via pi of these 3, so these 3, is equal to the image via pi of these 3. But now, if you look at the very first and the very last, they differ only by commuting tails of arrows. And, well, I haven't told you how I proved tail commute, but believe me that that was an easier proof, and that's why I skipped it. So, these are already known to be equal, or rather, their pi's are equal, so I can cancel them, and therefore I know that pi of the left is equal to pi of the right, but that precisely means that pi is maps 4t arrow, for maps 4t to 0, so I may as well mod out by 4t when I define a tilde. So pi remains well defined, even when I mod out by these relations. Okay. So that's the first piece of action. I've constructed a tilde and pi, and I explained, well, at least the hardest piece of what I mod out by in a tilde.
The fact that the fact that the two summons appears differently as in the 4T formula is a I think the plus is the last two terms of the regularity here are a bit just commuted from the above formula of 4T.
No, I may have flipped the order of the left hand side and the right hand side.
I think if we look at the slide, it is different, but perhaps.
It's conceivable that I made a mistake. But I didn't. This is right. And this is correct as it is. It's correct possibly with left and right replacement, but no more. Okay. So now I need to tell you about the second piece of action. I need to construct z tilde. So I need to construct an invariant of KBHs. So I need to, so what I will do is every place where I see a crossing, so where I see a virtual crossing, I do nothing. I just leave it as it is. Okay? Every place where I see a crossing, I will replace it by an exponential or an exponential quiver of arrows, where quiver is in the correct English meaning of the word quiver, so a bunch of arrows taken together, so, or bundle if you wish. So an exponential quiver of arrows will just mean a zero arrow, a no arrow, plus one times a single arrow, plus 1/2 times two arrows, plus 1/3 times 3 arrows, and so on. And this I will do for every crossing of my diagram, of my picture that represents a knot in KBH. So basically, if my KBH was this one, I will have an exponential quiver of arrows going from the upper to the lower here, another exponential one here going from the upper to the lower, another one here, and then I will expand using multilinearity. Okay, so I will get a huge linear combination of many, many, many diagrams with many, many arrows between blue and red, and then I will simply unwrap the diagram, so consider the diagram as a combinatorial diagram rather than as a topological diagram, so it will become just a diagram. Oh my god, I wish the computer was nearer the screen. So it will become just a diagram like this one with lots and lots and lots of arrows running from one place to the other. I need to show two things. I need to show that this is well defined, so it satisfies all the relations, and that it shows that it satisfies property U. Property U is actually the easy thing, and I leave it as an exercise for you. Okay? The hard thing is to show that Z satisfies Rademeister on the relations. And the hardest of these is Rademeister 3. So here's the proof of Rademeister 3. So first of all, what's the left-hand side of Rademeister 3? It's three crossings going between three strands, and believe me, when you translate it to combinatorics, it will become a quiver of arrows going this way, then another one going this way, then another one going this way. So each one of these is really an exponential of arrows. The right-hand side of Rademeister 3 is the same, but with this one, but with sort of slightly different combinatorics. But you see, tails commute. These arrows commute with these arrows. And the product of two exponentials where the things commute, e to the x plus y, e to the x, e to the y is equal to e to the x plus y. So I can replace this by a single exponential of the sum where the head could end either here or here. But then the 4T relation says that the sum of two ways of ending the head here, of putting the head here, commutes with a single arrow placed here. So again, using, you know, so if X commutes with Y, or if Z commutes with X plus Y, then E to the X plus Y commutes with E to the Z. So I can move this quiver of arrow through to below, and then I can unpack this to become this pair, and I've just proven Rademeister 3. So all I, you know, you didn't have to follow me precisely, you just had to appreciate that there was nothing there, that it was really, really easy, except for tracking the combinatorics. Okay? And I'm done. Okay? I've fully identified the associated graded, and I've constructed an expansion. The problem is that the associated graded, as it is written right now, is sort of useless, because it's written as a messy space, modulo relations that are very hard to understand. So, you know, I've correctly identified a target space. And, you know, if I wanted to put it on a computer, I could, because it's a graded space. There are finitely many generators in each degree and finitely many relations. In principle, I could manipulate it, but it's very hard and very messy. So the next step is to make it a bit more manageable. And this is the bracket-rise theorem. So theorem, ABH, now I don't care if you call it ABH or A tilde BH, because they're isomorphic. So ABH is isomorphic to this collection of diagrams, the same skeleton, so the same red and blue pieces, but now the same sort of arrows, but now the arrows are allowed to have internal trivalent vertices, but the internal trivalent vertices are always of the two-in-one-out kind. So, in each such vertex, two are coming in and one is coming out. I should have said that there is also an orientation at each internal vertex. I think I forgot to put it. Okay? And then you mod out by, if you have an arrow head near a cap, it's zero. If you have a tail on the blue ones, it's zero. And then the STU and I anti-symmetry, this is the orientation bit that I didn't mention, and IHX relations. What are the STU relations? So STU1 says that if you have an internal vertex lying on top of a skeleton piece, you can expand it to either A times B or B times A. And that's why I call it bracket rise, because sort of the bracket arises here. So really the vertex stands for a bracket. It's AB minus BA. STU2 does the same, but when the orientations are different. STU3 wants to do the same, but you see, if you would write the left-hand side of STU3, you would have to write a vertex which is one in, two out. And this I didn't allow, so the left-hand side is zero, and then STU3 is just the tails commute relation of before. And forget IHS, don't forget. This is IHS and it stands for, it can be interpreted as the Jacobi relation. If you consider vertices as brackets. So I claim that this space is isomorphic to the space before. One map is obvious, okay? The space before is simply includes into this space. The diagrams of before are special cases of these. But you still have to check that the relations map to relations. So here is the proof. I mean, I'm not showing it in detail, but the 4T relation follows from two STU relations, one STU1 and one STU2. Okay? And the corollary from this theorem, I'm just running out of time, so the corollary from this theorem is, first of all, that the whole picture is related to the algebras. And secondly, you see, since I'm only allowing two in and one out vertices, if you look at the connected components, the black connected components that stay, once you remove red and white, each such connected component is only made of two in, one out vertices, so it can only be a tree or a wheel. Okay? And furthermore, you think a little bit more and you find that ABH is a bi-algebra. And for a good, you know, for a good topological reason, but I'm running out of time, but you know, ABH has a co-product and a product, and both are kind of natural. The product is actually a bit harder to explain. The co-product actually comes from the fact that A is dual to invariants, and invariants you can always multiply. So since you can multiply invariants, you can co-multiply elements of A. But anyway, it's a bi-algebra, and you can check that it is satisfies all the conditions in the Milner-Moore theorem. So it's the universal enveloping algebra of its set of primitives. And then you can check that the primitives are precisely the connected subdiagrams that appear here, meaning the primitives are precisely wheels and trees. But these are wheels with colored tails, and sorry, these are wheels with colored tails, so these are just cyclic words on the alphabet T. And they're colored by which red strand the tail of the wheel connects to. And the heads of the trees are colored by which blue strand that head lies on. Okay? So overall, that space of wheels and trees is the cross product, so the space of primitives is the cross product of the cyclic words and the Frege algebra to the power H. And that's why we would, and therefore we have constructed an invariant with values here. Okay, so I know it's getting less and less understandable, but still one more word. So now I have a reasonable definition, a definition that comes from completely kind of expected things, and the only thing that goes in there, which is sort of magical, is the exponential function. I guess also this bracket rise theorem, which is trivial, but perhaps not, you need some leap in order to guess it. Okay? But, so I have an invariant in a manageable space coming from a reasonable place, but it is still very, very hard to compute. And the reason why it is very, very hard to compute is because, you know, the invariant of a picture is a whole product of quivers of arrows, and then you have to reduce the modulo these relations, so you have to sort of bulk manage, you have to work with bulk management, you have to know how to manage exponential expressions of arrows modulo funny relations. And that was essentially the content of my September talk, and the result is that this is indeed and here is the actual computation for one specific tangle. So the conventions are not quite explained, but I just wanted to emphasize that at the end, this really, it actually is computable, and the result is specific numbers, and I'll stop with propaganda, as always.
Thank you.
Sorry for it being less organized than it should have been.
That's not too worried.
Yeah.
So you said that knot theory proper sort of embeds into K pH.
Yeah. And that's sort of what I used in this picture. I mean, this picture is a knot theory proper part of K pH.
Right.
Yes.
So is the whole ABH and ABH tilde description become something known for the, if you restrict to knots proper?
Yeah. It's the Treisen wheels part of the Concievich integral. With some, small print should be added. So, in ordinary knot theory, in ordinary finite type invariants, there is no well-behaved universal finite type invariant of tangles. You have to have parenthetizations at the ends of the tangle. The ends of the tangle must be parenthesized. And here, the target space is slightly different, but then you get rid of the parenthetizations, because instead of trees, you have oriented trees. Instead of unoriented trees, like in ordinary finite type theory, you get oriented trees. So, but in terms of power, it's equivalent to the restriction of the Concievich integral to Treisen wheels. Sorry. The restriction of this invariant to classical tangles is equivalent in terms of power, is bicomputable from the restriction to Treisen wheels of the ordinary Concievich integral.
Yeah, maybe slightly different than the technical question. Could you show again this theorem in the end? And maybe just something about it. There was this picture about it with the So what about the those arcs or those edges which start on red and end on red? Where do they take? Find a place in this thing?
Good point. So. You're right. So modulo the relations, so it's essential to put these diagrams inside the picture. However, modulo the relations, they are not necessary. Okay? So when you compute z tilde, it will sometimes give you arrows going from red to red. So you cannot ignore them, and they're not equal to zero. But modulo these relations, you can get rid of them. And the reason is, you see, suppose you have an arrowhead on a red. Remember that an arrowhead at the top is equal to zero. This is this CP relation. So what you do is you slide the arrowhead from the bottom towards the top. And every time you want to slide it across something, you pick up a vertex. So you can do it at the cost of things with more and more vertices. So in other words, at the cost of more and more trees and wheels. And that's part of this difficult management issues that arise when you try to actually compute it.
So yes. I have actually two questions. So one question is, you mentioned relation to topological field theory or something like this. And the second question was the original form of this citation from Kronecker.
The Kronecker is classical. He says, God created the integers, all else is the work of men. So my modification is, first of all, being gender neutral. And second, I'm using an equally true statement but restricted to topology. Okay? Now, the TQFT thing, so, you know, that's a lengthier story, but there is a certain quantum field theory. Well, no, I'm not sure how. Do you know the analogous story for Chern-Simons theory? So, basically, there is a certain four-dimensional TQFT whose collection of Feynman diagrams is precisely, you know, this collection of wheels and trees. And when you evaluate these Feynman diagrams, the computation becomes a certain computation of integrals over configuration spaces. And when you compute it, you get an alternative formula for Z tilde, which comes straight from the topology, because, well, straight from the embedding, not okay. So at the end, I know that the invariant Z tilde is well defined thanks to this quantum field theory description, even though I don't know if the disturbing conjecture is true or false.
No further questions, then thank you again.